Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Between the Sound and Sea by Amanda Cox. After a lawsuit tarnishes her family's name, Josephina, or Joey, Harris can barely show her face in public. The opportunity to escape the scrutiny comes in the form of a decommissioned lighthouse on a North Carolina island. If she takes on the temporary job of lighthouse keeper and works on its restoration, she can leave behind her small town and the rumor mill. But the lighthouse is unlike other projects she's worked on. There are odd notes tucked in hidden crevices of the crumbling stone walls, pages torn from the lighthouse keeper's log, but they're signed by someone named May. In the notes, May details her time caring for the lighthouse and the dangers she's experienced with the sea. Joey is drawn to May's story and searches for more information about her, only to discover that there's no record of her at all. When strange things begin to occur on the island, the locals are convinced that it's the ghost of the lighthouse keeper and his daughter who were lost at sea during World War II. To find the truth, Joey gathers all of the information she can, some legend, some fact. The tale she weaves is one of love and wonder, but she's left without an ending. If Joey wants answers, she will have to find the end to May's story herself.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, I'm chatting with Amanda Cox, the Christie Award-winning author of The Edge of Belonging, The Secret Keepers of Old Depot Grocery, and He Should Have Told the Bees. And I'm so delighted that we're going to get to talk about writing today. So welcome to my show, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
I'm not sure this is a question you wanted to talk about, so feel free just to say, nah, I'm not going to answer that. But how much do you, I love the titles of your books. How much input do you have in that?
So I usually will get a questionnaire. There's a working title, and we'll go over some different ideas. And so my publisher kind of has the final say on those. All of them, except for my very first book, were titles that I had chosen, so that's been a lot of fun for me. But they usually will let me have a lot of input, but ultimately they want to decide if it, you know, marketing-wise, it represents the story well.
Right. No, I totally understand, but I just thought I'd ask because, you know, sometimes I'm always curious.
Yeah.
Great. So let's talk about, have you ever regretted killing off a character? And if you have, then why?
There's really only one character that I can think of that I sort of regret. I mean, I don't regret it because, honestly, it had to happen for the story, but I just loved this character so much, and I enjoyed writing the character. And so he's a character in The Secret Keepers of Old Depot Grocery, and he kind of has a tragic ending to his story. And so I'll get questions from readers and they'll be like, oh, why did you kill this character off? I love them so much. But it was one of those things where it kind of had to happen for the rest of the story and to raise some stakes of some things.
Yes. Yeah. There have been a few characters that I've been a little regretful. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. You have to die. Yes. You know, let's see. I'll give you a unique way to die. How about that? You know, have the conversations with them. I'm really sorry, but
somebody.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about writing some sort of prequel to bring him back to life?
Yeah, that would be a fun possibility. Or maybe some side story that wasn't like included in the novel that gets a little more.
Yeah.
Screen time, so to speak.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I just say that because, like, this one character I'm thinking of in one of my books, I have thought about writing, like, a little, like, you know, Christmas, some sort of, like, Christmas short story with this character, you know, like, years before the story happened. But anyway, we digress completely, but it's always fun to know you know, we get really attached to our characters, even the ones that, you know, we know are we know have to die. So that can be kind of sad. Let's talk about happier times, like writing. So how do you fit writing into your busy schedule? I mean, you have three kids, you have a lot going on, looks like, from your bio. So how do you fit writing into your schedule?
So I am not a morning person at all, but I kind of forced myself to become a morning person. I used to write at night, but then I just found myself being so drained at the end of the day that there was no creativity left over. So I get up every morning and I write from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. roughly, before the rest of the house is kind of moving around. And I jokingly say that the only people that I want to talk to at that time of day are fictional people, and I need a lot of coffee to do it. So I just try to really be disciplined with my writing schedule and make myself sit in that chair every morning. So otherwise, I don't know if anything would ever get written.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Amanda. I've been struggling with that writing time because I used to write first thing in the morning, and then I started this part-time job where I have to leave the house pretty early, and, you know, it's really kind of thrown me off. I'm finding my way back, but it's been a little more piecemeal. I'm kind of looking forward to the summer. I work at I'm a tutor at a school, and so I'll have time off. Maybe I'll get my writing mojo back, and I can have a better plan for the fall. But, yeah, I hear you. It can be tough to figure out that time.
And when, like, something throws your schedule off, we got a new puppy a couple years ago, and it decided that that was playtime, was that our morning session. So it's funny how, like, or I don't know if funny is the right word for it, but life can really throw off those beautiful schedules sometimes.
They can. And I think that one of the struggles that I've been having is that I'm like, I had everything. It was all set up. I was getting stuff done. And then, you know, the job and the kid here and there. And just like, and I have to remind myself, okay, this is what God has brought for me. And I really just need to stop complaining about it and whining about it like I'm three. Right, and just figure out a different way, different way. So I do some writing after dinner, which I never used to do, because if I'm like you, I'm like at the end of the day, I'm like, but either I do that or I just don't get enough words down. So it's been I've been a little bit, you know, back and forth on those and just trying to figure that out. But yeah, it can be difficult.
Oh,
it can
yeah.
be challenging sometimes. Puppies, kids, you know.
Right.
Can't just go to an island and write. Darn it.
That would be nice.
Sometimes I think about that. For you, you mentioned coffee, but is there anything else that's absolutely essential for you to write? What kind of things do you like you need to have to write well?
I would say one of my favorite things that I have are my noise cancellation headphones. Those can be really helpful for me to kind of block out all the little noises going on. I mean, nobody's typically up early in the morning, but if I'm trying to squeeze in some extra writing time, I can kind of put those on and it helps to play some just instrumental music. Another thing that I have found really helpful, because I hate rough drafts, I get distracted so easily on that first draft. Is I have a little hourglass that's like a 15-minute hourglass, and so I will do writing sprints with the hourglass. And so I love that thing because also if the time runs out, it's not like a timer on my phone. It doesn't beep, so if I don't notice that all the sand ran out, then I write longer than 15 minutes in that word sprint. So those are a couple of things that kind of help me keep moving and help keep the distractions down.
Oh, yeah, no. I've done that before. Or tried to, you know what else I've done? I've tried to cover up, like, the words, you know, like, my word now will tell you how many words, like, in that left-hand corner of your document. And I'll, like, strategically move something in front of it so I can't see, because I'll be, if I'm, like, not really settled in the story, like you said, if I'm just a little bit distracted by stuff or just not, for whatever reason, I haven't, like, become immersed where I'm not like paying attention. I'll keep glancing at that and I'm like, how many were, oh, only five more words, what? You know, so if I cover it up, then I'm like, okay, I can't look at that, and it can help me just kind of press on. So do you have a, like a favorite spot for reading or reflecting on your current work in progress?
I have a desk that's in, kind of in the corner of my living room. So my living room kitchen area is all kind of open. But I've got like this one little corner, which has been nice as my kids were smaller. Now they're getting older, and I'm like, I kind of wish I had like a little hideaway to go and do all of that in. But, you know, I'm partial to my little desk in the corner. It's like my little area that no one is allowed to touch.
I will say that my kids are all, I have two in college and two in high school now. And I, when they were younger, I had like a little kid table in my office, because they wanted to be near me, but I'm like, I got work to do. And so they could, like, do their little craft things, and I got really better, good at tuning them out. Now, of course, they don't want to be in the same room with me, but which is fine. But it's just kind of funny. I'm like, yeah, I kind of finally got rid of that table and kind of miss it a little bit, because it was kind of cute to have them working there, coloring on stuff while I'm like, you know, banging out words on the on the keyboard there. So let's talk about your characters. We talked a little bit about, you know, killing them off when we needed to, but how are some ways that you connect with them when we're not killing them? How do you connect with them?
So my background is in professional counseling, and so one of my favorite parts of writing is getting to know my characters really well and trying to understand what motivates them, kind of their backstory, where they came from. So I can get really immersed in all of, you know, those aspects of writing. So I think, you know, sometimes that connection comes through taking down those notes. I've got to, you know, I'm not a plotter by any means, and my notes that I take are really kind of chaotic. But I'll, for every book that I write, I have a little journal, and so I just kind of carry it around with me, and some random thought pops into my head about that character of like, oh, you know what, I bet that's why, you know, they do what they do. So I'll have all this chaotic note-taking about my characters. And so that's kind of one way that I kind of get to know them and connect with them. Another thing that I do is, for me, there's something different between typing something and handwriting something. And so if I'm trying to write a scene that is emotionally impactful for that character, I will handwrite that scene. And it kind of helps me get into their heart and, to their, and into their head a little bit more when I write that way.
Yeah, you know, I used to, I mean, I totally get the connection between, you know, writing something down. There's something even more personal about that, I think. There is a deeper connection, which is why I'm a tutor at a middle school, which is why I make the kids handwrite stuff, and they're like, ugh, and I'm like, yeah, I know, but you'll remember it better. So I'm like rolling their eyes. I'm like, I know, you don't believe me, but it's true. So get that pencil moving. But yeah, I wish I could do that more, but I have carpal tunnel, and I just can't hold the pencil and write as much as I used. I used to handwrite a lot of stuff out, but I just, like, give me my split keyboard. I just have to do it that way, but I miss it. I miss it. I totally understand. But I must admit, Amanda, what I don't miss is being unable to decipher my own handwriting, so.
Yes. Like, what was that supposed to be? Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah,
I feel like my handwriting has gotten worse and worse.
Yeah, I don't miss the struggle with, like, what did I mean there? I don't understand. I'm sure it was brilliant. I'm sure it's brilliant. Well, we are almost out of time, so let's close with one final question about what is one of your favorite ways to connect with readers?
So I really enjoy connecting with readers on Facebook and Instagram, especially Instagram. That's where kind of my inner goofball comes out, and you see me doing some goofy videos and things like that. But you can find me at Amanda Cox Writes on both Facebook and Instagram. I have a newsletter that goes out quarterly that you can find on my website, which is AmandaCoxWrites.com. And so that's where you get kind of like the inside scoop that nobody else sees, is on that newsletter.
Oh, great. Yeah. And listeners, you can find that information with the notes to this podcast, how to connect with her. But thank you so much for sharing. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great talking with you.
And listeners, remember, stay tuned and you'll get an excerpt from Between the Sound and the Sea.
Now an excerpt from Between the Sound and Sea by Amanda Cox. November 2005, Swan Quarter, North Carolina. The old woman observed the young boy kick back in the adjacent recliner, his face practically glued to that tiny screen as it had been since his visit began. Not that she blamed him. What 15-year-old wanted to spend an entire Saturday stuck in an assisted living apartment with a couple of old ladies for company? "Listen here, boy. Put down that Game Boy, and I'll tell you something you'll never forget." He looked up at her, grinning. "Aw, this isn't a Game Boy. It's my new Nintendo DS, and I'm this close to beating the boss on my game." He held up two fingers, pinching at the air. "Maybe I ought to get me one of them things. Since I can't get around on these old legs like I used to, I get bored sitting around here." He smiled and shook his head, continuing with his game. She glanced up at the sound of pots and pans banging in the kitchen. "What's your grandma up to?"
"Making supper for us, I think."
"Good. That means we've got plenty of time before she comes nosing in. Now put that thing down, like I said, and scooch closer so I can tell you something." She lowered her voice. "Something nary a soul knows except me. It's time I passed these stories down before I'm good and gone, and I've chosen you." She mined her memories for just the right tale. It'd have to be a good one to compete with a kid stuck on video games. He gave one last baleful look at the device before setting it on the table beside him. He scooted his chair closer to hers and adjusted the blanket that had slipped off her foot before sitting back down. "Sweet boy."
"It was a dark and stormy night," she began.
He groaned, looking back toward the game, waiting on the side table.
"A dark and stormy night, really?"
She chuckled.
"I'm not being funny. It really was a dark and stormy night, way back in 1941. Now listen close, Peter, and I'll tell you how the legend of St. May was born."
She closed her eyes, concentrating on recounting the tale. 15-year-old Kathleen tied off her skiff. Adrenaline coursed through her body like the spidery tendrils of lightning dashing across the sky. The wind whipped about her head, unfurling her sodden scarf, sending it airborne until it settled somewhere over the seething Atlantic. Hunched against the slanting rain, she jogged past her faithful light, a light that had guided her to the foolish drunk clinging to a vessel not seaworthy in even the fairest weather, a man who likely didn't merit Kathleen risking her life over, but duty had called. No matter who was at the mercy of the unpredictable currents of the Outer Banks. She opened her eyes a tiny slit. The boy leaned in close, eyes locked on her. She had him hook, line, and sinker now. Kathleen entered the squat stone cottage where she lived, boots squelching on the stone floor. She sidled up to the fire and added enough wood to coax the embers back to life. Then she stripped out of her sodden clothes and wrapped a wool blanket around her shoulders. She winced. Oops, that was probably more detail than a 15-year-old boy needed to hear about a 15-year-old girl. She continued, more mindful of the particulars she shared.
"Kathy?"
Her father's voice cut through the silence. Rolling thunder sounded on its heels. Kathleen cringed.
"Yes, duh?"
"Everything all right? Why are you up, lass?"
"Just checking the light," she called, and then pulled the scratchy wool tighter around her, sending up a silent prayer that he'd accept her answer and go back to sleep. She inched closer to the fire, aching for the heat to reach her bones. Moments later, her father's snores once again echoed through the room, and the tension she carried between her shoulder blades released. He was having a good night. Kathleen grabbed a kettle, filled it with water, and hung it over the fire. While the water came to a boil, she rubbed her hands together, trying to turn her blue-tinged nail beds pink. Once she downed her tea and her fingers burned white-hot with renewed circulation, Kathleen went to her father's desk and pulled out his sacred book.
"This is our livelihood," he'd told her 100 times. "A lightkeeper is only as good as the record he keeps."
She paused and looked at the boy.
"Now, listen close. It might not sound like much, but this is the moment Saint May was born."
He nodded, eyes wide. Into the book she poured her account of the night, how she'd woken with an inner urging to check that all was well along the coast, how she'd climbed those endless spiral stairs, chiding herself for venturing into this unkind weather without cause. That was when the light beam had glinted off the overturned dinghy being tossed about in the storm. She wrote of the waves that had crashed over her own vessel as she maneuvered her boat. Not just anyone could have managed swells like that, especially not someone as young as herself, be they male or female. But 15-year-old Catherine had honed her skills on the water since her father had taken up his post at Bleak Point Island when she was a little girl. Everything had been preparing her for that night, her first solo rescue at sea. She continued pouring her heart and soul onto the page, telling how the inebriated man had nearly capsized her when he grasped at the oarlocks to pull himself aboard. Though the skiff had tipped wildly, Kathleen had kept a cool head despite her knowledge that a merciless sea cared not whether it was a drunkard or a teenage girl dumped into its depths. She'd calmed the cursing, thrashing man and coaxed him around to the stern like she'd seen her father do so many times before. And she'd saved him. Scarf and storm concealing her identity, she motored him to Ocracoke before disappearing back to her remote island home. At the bottom of the log page, she impulsively signed a name she wished was her own, a person she craved to know, but who was little more than a legend to Kathleen, a person who, if they were there, would know how to help her father. But hadn't the night's events proven she was equal to the task life had handed her? As long as she continued doing whatever it took to conceal the fate of the real keeper of Bleak Point Light, everything could stay as it always had been. The girl stared at the page on which she'd poured out the events of the evening, all written in her scruffy hand instead of mimicking her father's writing as she normally did. Ever so carefully, she removed her account from the precious book, leaving no trace of the torn-out page. As far as anyone knew, this rescue never happened, and that was the way it must remain. She walked to the fire with the page in her hand. It would make better kindling than anything else. She stretched the paper toward the licking flames. "I am not but a figment of a drunk man's imagination," she said to the empty room. But instead of releasing it so that the fire could claim it, she clutched the paper to her chest, holding tight to the memory. The woman opened her eyes to the young boy whose face was creased in concentration. Why was she scared for her father to find out? And why did she need to keep what she did a secret?
"That, my boy, is another story. I can tell you if you like."
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.